From the Blackpool Star Trek 50, The Exhibition, it's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Written by New York Times best-selling author and former US Marine and software developer Dayton Ward, Elusive Salvation is one of a range of 50th anniversary Star Trek-themed novels released in 2016. Although ostensibly a text which can be read as a standalone novel, the reader's enjoyment may be considerably enhanced if prior knowledge of the Trek universe is in place, especially with reference to Assignment Earth, Time's Arrow, and Carbon Creek from the original series The Next Generation and Enterprise. Ward employs a classic time travel motif to deliver a text which encompasses Earth history from the 19th, 20th, and 23rd centuries, and along the way manages to deliver the tale of Iramal refugees Dravina, Glorik, and Kandaron as they flee from the Patean in an attempt to preserve their race. The shaking increased for the next several moments to the point that Dravina was sure the ship would tear itself apart, and she gripped the edge of her console in a desperate bid to keep from being thrown from her seat. As the intensity grew to the point that she expected to hear the alarm signalling a hull rupture, the tremors began to subside. This was greeted by a host of new warnings and alerts erupting from different consoles around the control pod. "I'm losing manoeuvring control," warned Glorik, his voice tight. "We need to separate. Now!" "Did you transmit the message?" Dravina asked, her hand hovering over the control that would jettison the control pod free of the ship. Glorik nodded. "Yes." "Commencing separation." Dravina dropped her hand onto the control, feeling it depress under her fingers, and an instant later she felt the ship lurch somewhere beneath her. There was a momentary sensation of forward motion being interrupted, and she noted how the sky ahead of her fell out of view as the pod arced away from the rest of the ship. She felt them pitching forward, and there was a fleeting glimpse of the jettisoned vessel plummeting toward wide ground far below. "Scanners detected no acceptable higher life forms," reported Kandaron. "The region we are approaching is glacial, and there are no signs of significant technology or habitation." Dravina asked, "What about the main drive section?" "It is maintaining its final course. If that continues, it will fall into an area of the ocean that is one of the deepest on the planet. I cannot believe anyone looking for us will be able to find it." "Good." That at least was one less thing for Dravina to worry about. "Manoeuvring thrusters are only partially functional," said Glorik. "I'm having trouble stabilizing our descent." Seeing that issue on her own console, Dravina asked, "Have you selected a landing site?" Glorik grimaced. "I do not believe we will be able to maintain full control long enough to get us to the first location I chose." He paused, his hands moving over his controls before he shook his head. "It is requiring most of our available power to prevent us from crashing." In a tale which sees the extraterrestrial visitors encounter the much-loved Guinan from Star Trek The Next Generation and embraces the historical precedents of Mark Twain and Ronald Reagan, the reader is also transported to the era of Admirals Kirk and Nugura in the 23rd century, as well as the 20th. And indeed, time-travelling operative Gary Seven and Roberta Lincoln make solid appearances. An appreciation of the original series episode, Assignment Earth, which introduced the audience to both these kindly intergalactic humanitarian guardian angels, blue smoke transporter devices, and the iconic Beta 5 computer Green Cube, which was also intended to be the pilot for Star Trek's first spin-off series, would also increase the reader's overall appreciation. But Ward skillfully weaves their narratives and others, such as Tonya Barrows, from the original series episode Shore Leave, into the mosaic, as skillfully as intertextual references to Back to the Future and War of the Worlds. Grover's Mill, New Jersey, August 12, 1985. The alert tone roused Dravina from slumber, and for a moment she was uncertain she had heard anything. She stared up at the cabin's wooden ceiling, listening to the breathing of her companions, before the alarm sounded again. "What is that?" asked Kandaron, as he awakened and sat up, the blanket he used to cover himself falling to his waist. Dravina rose from her own sleeping area on the cabin's floor. "It appears to be an intercepted transmission." Crossing the room, she moved to the table where Glorik had positioned their lone remaining communication scanner. Its flat display had begun a continuous scroll of text, along with a rapid succession of computer-generated imagery. "It is from the ship." "Are you certain?" asked Glorik, who also had shaken off sleep and now moved to stand beside Dravina at the table. "After all this time?" Dravina replied, "It would seem so." As humans measured time on Earth, it had been more than 140 years since she and her companions crash-landed in the planet's inhospitable Arctic region. They had salvaged as much as they could carry from the wrecked vessel, but Drevina had elected not to destroy it. There still were items that could one day be of use, and components from the ship itself might also be recovered if needed. Canderon had put the craft's onboard systems into a hibernating state, reducing its energy output to the absolute minimum needed to power the distress beacon they would use to keep track of the ship's position. If his calculations were correct, this configuration would allow the craft to transmit via the beacon for at least another century. With the vessel as secure as they could make it, and already half buried in the ice thanks to the violence of its crash landing, Canderon took the additional step of using the pulse weapon from one of their survival kits to melt the ice around the craft, so that the ship settled even deeper into its resting place. The process had taken hours, after which the craft rested within its icy tomb. Occasional checks over the decades were enough to tell Drevina and the others that the vessel remained more or less, due to shifting ice in that glacial region, where it had landed. Using the scanner's touch-sensitive interface, Drevina instructed the device to answer the signal and request a report on the vessel's current status. It was the first time she had done so since their arrival, due to the additional drain on the ship's limited power systems. When the scanner returned its results, Drevina stared at the data for a moment, not believing what she was reading. The ship has moved. The novel can be enjoyed in many ways, like an episode of the original series, with appropriate metaphorical content relating to the plight of refugees, illegal immigration, and the challenges of embracing diversity and different cultures. The nods to past histories of Kirk and his crew from Miri to the Wrath of Khan and the Voyage Home, sprinkled like literary Easter eggs throughout the text, are so effectively intertwined into the text that the final story leaves the reader with a pleasing sense of stepping into the Star Trek universe, reacquainting oneself with its parameters and characters, and still appreciating the value and worth of the original Gene Roddenberry vision after over half a century of adventures across television, movies, graphic narratives, audio plays, novels, and novellas. The human adventure continues. Now, you may be listening to this and thinking, where's Jenny Finch then? Well, she's currently in a different country, and some of our other Book of the Month people have actually headed off, so it was up to myself to hopefully do a brave attempt there. But listening to that particular piece, we're delighted to say Aidan has been sort of tuned in. He's sort of drummed into duty in the absence of Paul at present at the Star Trek exhibition. First of all, Aidan, we're delighted to be able to actually share this next recorded live from the captain's chair. What excitement!
Oh, yeah, it's... just to unleash your inner Kirk while reading. Just all you need now is an apple, really.
Well, that's true, as opposed to the apple, which, of course, has Celeste Yarnell, who is a classic sort of soul, who's a regular contributor. And good to see Celeste is obviously back to peak fitness again. Yeoman Martha Landon, I believe, from Lieutenant Martha Landon from the Apple episode. Aidan. We've just been looking, obviously, at Star Trek, the original series books, Elusive Salvation, by New York Times best-selling author Dayton Ward. You haven't read it as yet, but from what we kind of talked about there, would you actually say, yeah, I'll give it a go?
Yeah, I'm more of like a comic book person, like reading the crossover from Star Trek and Marvel, which actually caught my eye, because I was like, I never knew there was a crossover like that existing, and there's actually an upcoming one with aliens, which would be very interesting to see data.
Absolutely. Well, of course, I mean, looking towards that, he says as he sort of steps out of the chair for the moment, oh, what excitement. We've got a whole range of other factors. And in the graphic narrative world, of course, Marvel and DC, and of course, IDC and Keynote for Comics, there's a big history of Star Trek in graphic narratives.
Yeah, it's just, it gets like more people into it because most people nowadays just like read traditional novels like Game of Thrones because I'm a huge fan of that.
George R.R. Martin, I suppose there might be a possibility if they can actually ever get the rights to be sorted where Westeros could actually feature the bridge crew of the Starship Enterprise. After all, if they can counter the Green Lanterns and the X-Men in various ways, there's always a possibility. There are always possibilities.
Yeah, it's pretty much the Terran Empire, just put that version in Game of Thrones. That'll be interesting.
Absolutely, yes. As I say, just to set the scene for our listener here, in terms of the Book of the Month product, and I think we will do a slightly fuller version, hopefully with Jenny, in the fullness of time. We're looking out upon a whole range of wonderful artistic designs, which weren't here, of course, when I came along in July to actually sort of touch base with the exhibition as a fan in those particular areas. Do you have a particular favourite? Because I noticed, obviously, the Spock, Idik and 5-0 is one of the sort of classics there for the 50th anniversary. From your own sort of reading, is this an area that, or are we looking at this They're Dead Jim illustration?
Yeah, it's just funny just seeing how like all different comedic deaths of the red shirts. You've got one Butterby attacked by a Gorn, another one just being attacked by a Horta. It's just like, and you got Kirk and Spock just.
Let's test ourselves here. So we've got actually from Friday's Child, I think the sort of Clea that's actually being put down there from the sort of the area where the chap actually recognises a Klingon and then actually gets executed. You mentioned the Horta that was there from Devil in the Dark. Moving further down, we see the classic Spock's brain. What's not to love about Spock's brain and the initial line from that perspective? It's not Spock's brain. Let me rephrase that. Yeah, I was wrong. I have to hold back. It's not Spock. It's that which survives.
And they also got stuff like even just Tribbles just watching on, just like it was the carnage with the whole smiling faces.
Yeah, they do. It's a bit like Spike, so we'll work through that. So, yes, I'm glad we managed to create that. It's that which survives there. Every cell in his body is actually sort of imploded from the inside. Rock, of course, from, obviously, I say the Addams Family, but it was actually Ted Cassidy who portrayed Rock. And that was where What Are Little Girls Made Of, I believe.
Yep. And we also got the Gorn from the arena.
The classic. One of the experiences at Destination Star Trek was indeed seeing the chap who was in the original Gorn outfit, who was actually there. 50 years on, he's put a few miles on the clock, shall we say. That's all I'll say. We have, in fact, I say a double up here from sort of Star Trek folk who've been with us on the Midweek Drive in the past. We mentioned, obviously, What Are Little Girls Made Of. That would be with Sherry Jackson, who was Andrea there. And as we mentioned earlier, from the Apple, we've got the wonderful, calm, peaceful inhabitant there who's whacking one of the security guards over the head with a weapon that he's been told to by, of course, Val.
And of course, my favourite one, right here, the transporter accents, because transporter accents were just very common during the original series, and that's why McCoy probably had a fear of it in the space seed episode.
Quite right, and indeed in Enterprise we look at that there. And I was just looking in terms of this other one. I thought for initially it was I think I might have been stumped on this particular area that's being zapped from that perspective. Initially I thought it was Changeling, but I don't think it is. Anyway, let's a little bit under this. This is all composed by Anna Maria Jung. I wonder if she's any relation to Carl Jung, the father of modern psychoanalysis. Austrian illustrator who produces illustrations for the editorial market. 18, she published her first graphic novel, went on to study multimedia arts with a focus on the traditional animation at the University of Applied Sciences in Salzburg. Lives in Graz, Austria. Again, testament to the universal appeal of Star Trek from that perspective. And you know, just behind you, we have, of course, the classic Vasquez rocks. Often seen for arena, but, of course, featured several times in Star Trek for Shore Leave and, I think, also for the one that we've just sort of referenced there in terms of Friday's Child.
Yeah, it's like this corner here is just all... We call it the arena corner because you got the one where Kirk's trapped and you got the Gorn batter start piking him.
I won't go. But anyway, sound effects optional on this particular basis.
Captain Kirk about to be stabbed by a pike. Reference to Christopher Pike.
Well, nice. I see what I did there. Bit of intertextual leanings from that perspective. Again, I think it's interesting that Christopher Pike certainly does emerge. Looking ahead, Star Trek Discovery, of course, launches in the summer, June, July, etc. The new sort of Brian Fuller-oriented series, supposedly referencing classic tales that have been referred to in the past but never actually fully explored. I'm thinking maybe the Romulan War.
That's one area that really, well, most fans want to see explored. But honest, I wouldn't. There's been rumours of being like Section 31, that being thrown about. Wouldn't mind some episodes on that.
Speaking of Section 31, and indeed this little novel book of the month, there's a wonderful sort of end piece to Elusive Salvation, which actually focuses very much on the foundations and origins of Section 31.
Ooh, I'll have to keep an eye for that.
I would have thought so. In case you're wondering, I think I would give it a 9.5 out of 10. It was a really outstanding play by Dayton Ward. I think my favourite as well, I like the graphic imagery that we've got here. I mean, there isn't time to actually look at the whole system here. But this little piece by Mick Cassidy in Ireland with, of course, the classic line, "Risk is our business," from tomorrow. Not tomorrow, it was yesterday. Return to Tomorrow.
Yeah, Return to Tomorrow. Exactly. Because got the This Is Not Nancy, got the Romulan commander from the Enterprise incident.
Let's do that little test again. I know it's a Trek thing, but bear with me for that. We work through this. Personal favourite, "No, I can't leave," from, of course, This Side of Paradise.
Yeah, got
City on the Edge of Forever. The classic line from that. The Gorn, of course, as you mentioned, is there as well. Need any help, Doctor? Whatever gave you that idea, Bread and Circuses?
Yeah, got the Enterprise and the Constellation along with the Doomsday Machine.
Absolutely. I think are we being summoned elsewhere? I think for the moment we'll take a little setup there. We'll keep on rolling at this particular piece and continue ever onwards.
My name's Aidan Robertson. Official role is exhibition guest assistant. I pretty much help people with our application, taking photos and guiding people through the exhibition.
Which is excellent. Now, I said to Paul earlier in the year that those of us who had the experience, and I use that word deliberately, of going to Destination Star Trek in Birmingham, you come back here and this place is just light years ahead. And I mean that in every sense of the word, both in customer care, in sort of looking after the Trekkers, etc. And you must be really proud of the sort of setup that you've got here.
Oh, very proud. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to Birmingham, but people...
Believe me, honestly, please. it was an extraordinary event.
Yeah, but the people who have went and have come here have said, like, to be able to sit on our bridge set, much better than the one in Birmingham, because for them it's just paying entry fee and you can sit in the captain's chair in the helm of navigation for as long as you want and pretend to be Kirk.
Well, exactly. I suppose Scotty, because he kind of crossed over from both Next Generation and of course, the original series. Aidan, I detect a slight northeastern accent. Are you possibly from Newcastle area?
Why, aye.
There you go. Well, you know, it's important to go east coast, west coast. It's always important to speak to somebody who's from Middlesbrough. I can appreciate this, or the importance of that. You've shared with us, obviously, how you got involved with Star Trek and that connection. I probably was sort of one of the original sort of folk who sort of followed it through and really enjoyed it at two levels. One, the action-adventure nature of the series, but also the fact that it is, at its core, a really inspiring text for folk of all ages.
Yeah, it's because, like, back then, like, the science fiction they came out with, especially during the original series, people were like, is that really possible? And they actually made it sound very plausible. I'd say even Next Gen took, like, ideas like the Dyson Sphere in from Relics, Dyson Sphere and all that. And I was like, because you see in science reports now all about Dyson Spheres, oh, they exist and all that. I was like, I'm watching Next Gen, you're like, holy hell, how a show 50 years ago or so predicted something that's now happening.
It all connects. I mean, hats off to Gene Roddenberry, who, again, I was fortunate to meet back in the 1980s, actually in Newcastle, when he was actually over there at about 84, 85. There we are. It's different times. We need the City on the Edge of Forever. What's your favourite aspect of this exhibition? Because we're currently standing sort of at the end in the sort of merchandise sector, which is full of apps. I mean, I can see my Christmas list already sort of ticking up from this. But your favourite, is it the transporter? Is it the bridge? Is it the fantastic artwork? Because, of course, let's not forget we've got the a great artwork exhibition as well here.
Has to be the bridge. It's like, normally I'm not on the... When it's a bit quiet, I usually do sit in the chair and unleash my inner Kirk, doing the whole lean and all that.
It's important. I mean, our mascot Spike has already availed himself of that, and I think we'll hopefully be doing the programme for that later on this morning. Do you follow Trek in all its incarnations? I mean, in terms of obviously Enterprise and clearly Kelvin timeline versus classic timeline, Next Gen, we mentioned Deep Space Nine, etc. Or is there a particular favourite?
Yeah, I follow it all, but... Well, my favourite series has got to be original series, because how the Enterprise was built, how it's all models. So I've got an honours degree in software engineering and games development. It's like, nowadays, it's just all computer graphics. Back then, you had to build proper models. If you messed up on a model, that could have cost you hundreds of thousands and delay a programme for months. Nowadays, it's just two button presses, and that's it. You've only lost about 5 seconds.
Well, that's true. And also, there's something special about this. And I know it's a different series, but Jamie Anderson, who's a good friend and colleague, often speaks about his late father, Jerry, and the sort of care and craft that obviously he put into his series from, obviously, Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet onwards.
Yeah, it's just, I really just love all, like, old models, like the original trilogy of Star Wars. When you see the behind the scenes of, like, the whole Death Star trench run and how big it was. And when you look on the screen, it's, like, so tiny, like, how the hell did he do that? It looks computer graphic, but no, proper models. Even now with, like, the Enterprise model they've got in the Imperium, I think it, Intrepid Museum, just having a look at that and seeing pictures, I was like, bloody hell.
It's good stuff. And you mentioned Star Wars, of course. One of our semi-regular correspondents these days is Peter Beale, the producer who actually greenlit Star Wars to go with Alan Ladd back in the day. And I think even he was somewhat taken aback by the success that that's actually had. I think we can embrace both, though. I mean, for a long time I thought, no, I'm more of a Trekker as opposed to a Star Wars person. But ultimately, yeah, the universe is big enough for both the franchises.
I mean, even William Shatner said at a convention that should be thanking Star Wars, because it was the competition Star Wars brought that allowed Star Trek to pretty much reinvigorate.
We would have just had Star Trek Phase 2 as opposed to Star Trek The Motion Picture, which one or two critics unkindly said Star Trek The Motionless Picture. I don't agree. It was at a time in its own sort of system there. And this simple feeling is beyond our comprehension. Finally, Aidan, in terms of obviously this particular thing, and I know we'll hopefully speak to Paul if he can make it through the sniffles later on this morning. This continues into 2017, so great news here. People are listening to this and thinking, oh, darn, I'd really wanted to see Star Trek the Exhibition this year in Blackpool. It's okay. It's going into 2017.
Yeah, we are going to be doing some improvements.
Even better. This is it's impossible. How can you improve on perfection?
We're going to be swapping out the costumes in our section where we call Costume Corridor, where we've got several costumes from all the series, from Enterprise, Original Series, Next Gen. And we're going to be improving our bridge section, where we're going to be installing the view screen and having people simulate their own Kobayashi Maru simulators, so we see who cracks under the pressure.
What, to crack the no-win scenario, you know?
Yeah, so hopefully I'll be able to...
We change the conditions of the test, surely.
I'll probably make the Klingons more friendly.
Well, exactly. I mean, and will you see? Will it be Savek in the street? Will it be Chris Pine? It's a whole routine. Would you cheat? No, surely not. Just change the conditions of the test. And it's been fabulous just sharing some thoughts today. As I say, our first sort of official recording. Because when I first came along back in the summer, I came as a fan, and I was very impressed with this. And Paul at the time sort of said, "Oh, we must come back. Let's do a radio piece for it." We'll hopefully expand on that. Really great to touch base with yourself. I suppose I have to say, live long and prosper,
and peace and long life.
And like the cavalry coming over the hill, Paul has arrived. Paul Hill, as ever, a delight to touch base with yourself.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning.
Hats off to Aidan. He's done a fantastic job wearing a red shirt. I think he's engineering as opposed to security, so don't kill him.
he's a good lad.
Exactly. No, great stuff. And I mean, I didn't think you could improve on what you had in the summer here, and that was when I came along as a fan, not as a broadcaster sort of looking at where we're coming in. That it's gone up already, to use a metaphor, a quantum leap, Scott Bakula reference there, to a whole new level. And I hear that for 2017, there's even more excitement planned.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thanks very much for coming along and noticing everything. What we've got here today is we've been very kindly donated an art exhibition by CBS and the permission to use these 50 different pieces of artwork by 50 different artists, including Leonard Nimoy. We've actually got a piece just over here where... He painted this about a week before he passed away, unfortunately. So, leading on into the next season, over the winter we've got sort of restricted closing hours, but in 2017 we're looking to add a whole new layer of interactivity with QR codes with 3D models of the ships that people can use and have a look at on their phone.
This is going to be a dream. Yeah. I mean, forget the rest of Blackpool. I mean, great town though it actually is, but clearly Star Trek the Exhibition is just going to a whole new field.
Yeah, we're also going to implement Bridge Commander. That's been put back to, I think the release is March or May next year, so that's going to be implemented, which is like a virtual reality helmet where you'll be playing with other people on the bridge of the Enterprise, so that's very exciting.
So those are things to come in 2017, plus of course Star Trek Discovery, and who knows, there might be one or two nods in the direction of the new series that's coming out, I suspect.
Yeah, definitely, I hope so. We're in talks with CBS, but they're very secretive about all these.
It's understandable.
Exactly. Discovery, yeah.
Brian Fuller wants to just hold it back on that particular basis. Looking around at the whole system, do you have a particular favourite? I mean, I put this question to Aidan, and obviously we gravitate to this area here, which, unlike a certain event in Birmingham, doesn't have people leaping up in front of your good self saying, no, do it. And it's actually a much better set. I mean, I think if William Shatner had actually had the opportunity to be here, he would have felt much more at home here than he did in that godforsaken land, which I won't say anything more about because it was just extraordinary in every sense of the word. But do you have that was mentioned, the transporter. What about your own personal favourite, Paul?
I'm a massive fan of the captain's chair and also the transporter. But this bridge has got a great atmosphere now. I don't know if you've noticed, we've had a little redecoration
in
here.
It's like you look at the view screen and you can actually sort of do the fantastic, the ultimate geek exercise of identify the episodes that the various graphic narratives have come from. We've got Vasquez Rocks in there, as we've mentioned. We've got lots of other exciting things from that point of view. I do like the shot of the sort of vanishing yeoman there, sort of Janice Rand's sort of soul, but that's sort of put together. But again, just really great stuff here. I mean, you could literally just browse and see so much sort of fantastic art. It's the inspiration, I think. The inspiration that Trek has kind of, over the last 5 decades really brought to the fore. I mean, we've got artists from Austria, artists from Ireland, artists, you know, literally globally. You mentioned, obviously, the late Leonard Moy.
Yeah, it's going to be a real shame to have to let it go, actually, at the end of the month. We've got to pack it all up on Sunday, and it's off to Paris. So I'm not too sure which museum it's going in there, but yeah, it's been great to have it.
I think if it goes to the Louvre, obviously people will be saying, forget Mona Lisa, let's just check out the sort of Star Trek material from that perspective. Really great from that line. Quick mention for one of the fine folk over in Germany that I know we haven't spoken to on air as yet, but he also shares the wonderful beard that you have as well from that point of view. Not that they borrow it from each other, but we'd actually share his name as well, because he's also helpful in terms of costumes and so on.
Yeah, sure thing. I've been cultivating this.
Notice this, yeah.
Coat beard looking like a Spartan. Martin Netter from Filmvelt is without him basically this wouldn't be possible, because he's the largest collector of merchandise, Star Trek merchandise, in the whole of the world. He has over maybe 1 million different pieces, and some of which we've been, you know, lucky enough to get hold of here. So we've got over 100 different pieces, including costumes, props, sets, scripts, all sorts of stuff like that, and it's all really great, unique pieces.
And it's a really tremendous opportunity to actually see them as they should be appreciated, as something which was very much intrinsic to 20th century culture, 21st century culture. And Marty's done some fantastic job, and hopefully, as they will be speaking with us in the not too distant future, I know he's always off and about and doing all sorts of things, etc., at Filmvelt. Again, it's really great that sort of archived, because sometimes, as we know, BBC and Doctor Who episodes, for instance, you know, and film companies, they just think, oh, let's trash the sets, let's do with that, let's lose it all.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened with the original series set. I don't know if Aidan's already told you that, but...
We can always revisit.
The original bridge was destroyed after production wrapped. But yeah, we're very lucky to have access to all of this stuff here, and to have access to Martin's collection.
I get the official title right. I think I have, in terms of the lead-in. It's Star Trek 50 at the Blackpool. Paul, share with us, what's the official title that we have here?
Star Trek the Exhibition.
That'll be fine. That's Star Trek the Exhibition. Sorted from that perspective. A genuine delight. As I say, I know that many of our midweek drivers who'd been keen to come along because of flu, and in one case they're actually over to France, probably were waiting the exhibition, they haven't made it. Hopefully you've enjoyed the Book of the Month feature that we actually covered earlier. I know, I think you saw the script. From the script, are you a great reader of the sort of many books that Star Trek has produced as well, the canon of literature that's there? I mean, I think we're into nearly 1,000 novels, really.
For myself, my own personal preference, I'm really into movies, so that's my number one interest. I do read, but not really Star Trek novels. However, I have been on the hunt recently over in Manchester, looking in antique bookstores for classic novels of Star Trek. So I've found a collection.
Photo novels and James Blish ones, perhaps?
I'm not sure.
It'll be there. It'll be happening. And again, we'll emerge through that. And yeah, we'll have to have something to, obviously, as the portraits and the art exhibition moves, we need to have something that you can look at on through the bridge view screen.
Yeah, I found a collection of 400 novels with really nice classically drawn covers in a very, very quirky bookstore called Paramount Books in Manchester. I've been in talks to get some of those over here, so hopefully they'll be coming here soon as well.
Paul, it's been an absolute delight. I'm glad you're feeling slightly better, because I just thought, well, I'll give you a call when we arrive, about sort of 8:30 this morning, and I got that, and I thought, well, maybe it's there. Aidan was actually, I think, just having some breakfast outside. I thought, well, he's wearing a sort of Star Trek outfit, so he's obviously around in this sort of routine. And the other gentleman who also opened up the whole thing, I think, name check for him as well?
Yeah, Matthew Drake. Yeah,
well done, Matthew. Amazing. Exactly. So Matthew did his whole thing, etc. It's been a genuine delight. I finished off the piece with Aidan with Peace and Long Life. No, he said Peace and Long Life. I said Live Long and Prosper. We obviously say that again, but I think we shall return, if that's okay, Paul. And I think the Star Trek experience. Website, how do people get in touch with the whole system?
Everybody can go onto Google or conduct a search for Star Trek Blackpool, or the web address is www.startrekblackpool.co.uk.
We continue our little audio promenade at the Star Trek exhibition in Blackpool, and with Captain Paul, as I refer to him occasionally, Captain Paul, sort of through there. I thought initially, with it being close to Halloween, oh, that's why we've got some spooky signs here. We go cat's paw on the whole thing, but we're currently standing in front of...
Well, it's a fabric interpretation of Mr. Spock doing his typical sign of live long and prosper, made out of all sorts of weird and wonderful fabrics in a very interesting, unique way. And I think it comes from South Korea, actually.
Yeah, again, that sort of universality that comes across there. But yes, looking closely, it's a Kang thing. It does initially look as though he's stepped into a sort of very, very large cobweb, and it's like Star Trek meets Spider-Man, perhaps.
Yeah, it seems to be made out of millions of threads with a black, silky or satiny background on there. There's a lot of texture and detail. It looks nice.
And looking behind us, of course, we've got lots of hashtags there. Hashtag live long and prosper. Hashtag Cisco. Very apt, actually, as people comment when they see the photographs of your good self, Paul, in the chair. Hashtag store. All the sort of wonderful things here. What have we actually got? Because these look vaguely interactive in terms of what we've actually got on this side.
Yeah, this is the fan zone. So here we've got a collection of five different tablets that people can access. And they can go onto the official Star Trek website. And there's a link there to our website as well.
They've got a clip there from one of my personal little favourites there, yeah, where he actually says, "Kirok, I am Kirok."
Yeah, the Paradise Syndrome. Nice. Yeah, and you can watch clips and buy merchandise, and it's all on this interactive pad. Yeah.
All fantastic stuff here. Once again, if you're looking for something to do, fill the winter months during the wait for the next series, or indeed you're looking forward to next year, get yourself to Star Trek the Exhibition. Of course, technically, next year it would be Star Trek 51, the Exhibition.
Yeah, it will be. Or also Next Generation 30.
Nice. Yeah. See what you did there? Absolutely. Spot on. Brilliant.